Greetings, this is James Gillen. I'm your host. We've got Patricia Awion, and she's the co-director of Kimmett School of Ancient Mysticism, teacher, speaker, artist, and life counselor. Patricia's focus has been on relating the secret symbolism and mysteries of the ancients to the shifting energies of our current reality. She lectures and has created online lessons that speak of our eternal cycling through golden and dark ages, and how the evidence left behind by very ancient Kemetians, Egyptians, portrays a civilization that far surpasses our own technology and spirituality. So without any further ado, we want to welcome Patricia to the show. Patricia, are you with us?
I am with you. Thank you.
Well, I'm hoping we can keep it together here because we're getting hit with a massive solar storm right now.
And it is
affecting the technology, it seems, but hopefully we can keep the lines going here. You know, this is one of my focuses. I really love the ancients and their knowledge of the cycles and the past and actually going into our future and telling us what to expect. And I'm curious, as far as the Kemetians, the ancient Egyptians, where would they say we are, you know, according to their cycles and their prophecies?
Well, it's right along with pretty much what all the indigenous are saying all over the world. And I speak for what my father-in-law, Hakim, thought about. But he taught about these cycles, and there were five cycles that the ancients used the cycling of the sun to symbolize. And he, like everyone else, had said, we are in a process right now of coming into the awakening, the new thing after a long dark age.
Interesting. Now, Hakim, he's the one that has that, he has a house right in front of the pyramids, doesn't he?
I'm sitting in it, yes.
Okay. Interesting. I met him a long time ago.
Yes,
quite a few years ago.
Oh, yes. He was an amazing man. He passed in 2008, but wow, what a legacy he left.
Yeah. We had an interesting discussion about ETs and the pyramids.
Oh, I can only imagine.
Yeah. My theory
is... how he felt.
What's that?
Know how he felt.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. But anyway, everybody has their take on things, you know. But it was pretty interesting. But they, I know the sun cycles that we're in right now, do they align with the same information? But we've been getting information from the Pleiadians through a lot of meditation work and things like that. And what I found out is that the Pleiadians actually gave the Mayans their calendar. And that was according to the elders in the Mayan tradition. And and the information they kept giving me, I'm going, wow, this is aligning up with other ancient teachings and prophecies and things like that. Even to the day, it was just kind of crazy, and planetary alignments as well. But
well, you're absolutely right. It is amazing how much they knew. And how much they were able to unfold on multiple levels within the symbolism. And this, I'm speaking of the ancients all over the world, but it's amazing what you can find within the symbolism of the clues they left.
Yeah, I'm also curious, too, about... Now, I know... I've studied a lot of different traditions, and I know when I was with the Tibetans and doing a lot of work there, with the lamas there, I would go in and see these signposts. I would run into like Bodha, benevolent protector, you know, and it's a gate before you could get into the next level. And I'm always wondering about these beings. It seems like your work, they represent a consciousness or they have kind of a duty, you might say, or a nature, each one of these beings. I've always wondered if they, I don't know if it's what came first, the chicken or the egg, but do these beings actually exist, or have we created them with our own belief system?
When people ask me that about the pantheon of Egyptian gods and goddesses, they were not gods and goddesses. They're actually, we call them netters. That was the word that was used, netter, which actually is our root word for nature, nurture, eternal. All together, they represented all the forces of nature, their natural principles of the cosmos, the universe, the stars, the fabric of our reality. But all the different aspects that come together to form the whole. So Sekhmet and Isis and Hathor, some more well-known female netters, were different aspects of the same divine feminine principle. So when you say, did they ever walk the earth, the other thing they represented were all of, to me, they represent a breakdown of what humanity was during a golden age. We, according to what we understand and what the indigenous speak about, the cycling goes through dimensions, as well as evolution, up and down, descending and ascending. So during the golden age, we lived, had a higher dimensionality of existence, and therefore our capability, our sensory capability and perception was through the roof. And this is what they all come together to represent, is those capabilities that are now divided, or what I should say is we've now descended into this dark age where we've forgotten all these capabilities.
Now, in those times, let's say the veils are very thin, and we might have been in the fourth or even the fifth dimension.
Exactly.
Yeah, these,
or higher.
Yeah, these beings could actually exist on those dimensions.
Well, and I would say we were the beings. Because we would interpret all those capabilities as godlike, or an alien must have done it. Yeah. But if we existed in that reality, mankind, then we had those abilities. So we were the gods.
Yeah.
Did they walk the earth? Absolutely. But were they? What is an alien anyway? Another dimensional being.
Yeah, it is. It all ties together. It's so funny because we want to compartmentalize things and put things in little boxes and places. But my understanding is I've always said that humans are the ones that are out of sync. All the other, the nature spirits, the ETs, the ultra-dimensionals, the gods and goddesses and masters, they're all aware of each other, you know, on their level.
And the connectedness,
And they're all connected, yeah. But we, for some reason, we're out of sync with all of that, and most of humanity is. And then we've also tried to box things in these little levels, of time and location and things like that.
Well, and that's the nature of three dimensionality. See, this is all part from my perspective. That's part of the process we're going through. It's like everything is compartmentalized, as you said. It's divided. Humankind, we speak different languages. We have a veil we don't understand.
Yeah.
And we're so easily programmed to dislike, to be split and put into categories and boxes, which is, I think, indicative of what we're, this dark age. But it's also a challenge for us to see through it. Because how do we grow if we're not faced with challenges? So in some respects, this could be a great time on Earth for us as beings, whatever we are, to grow before the awakening.
Exactly. It seems like, I'm curious if the Egyptian teachings has a reference to this unity consciousness wave that seems to be coming through. That is definitely pushing everything up for us to look at it that is playing the separation game or outside of unity consciousness.
Yes, absolutely. This is exactly what the cycles speak to, that there was a division. Even the myths, there's a well-known myth about Osiris, Isis, and Set, gets upset with us. I'm just going to go through it quickly. The symbolism is amazing. But basically, Set sees Osiris as this wonderful shining god, whatever, Netter, we would say. And he gets angry, and in the end, he ends up cutting him into either 42 or 14 pieces, which also has significance. But that's the division of mankind. These 42 pieces became 42 gnomes of the land of Egypt, which also were, this is what Osiris was, the land, humankind, mankind, separated. And then, as the story goes, Isis comes, magically puts them all back together again, At, this is fun. At the spring equinox, 9 months later, Horus is magically born. Horus becomes the symbol of the sun rising on the horizon, the sun, S-U-N, sun, S-O-N, rising, representing the new cycle, or the reborn Osiris, coming together in wholeness again. Isis brings them back together. Horus is born and represents the ascended soul of Osiris. Fascinating.
Yeah, seems like we've heard that story before somewhere.
Exactly. Well, yeah, there's that. I don't even want to start that one.
Yeah.
That's a whole other topic.
Well, I mean,
but yes,
in every culture. That same story is in every culture. It's every culture, if you study the cultures, but, you know, people get caught up in just one culture and believe that's the way.
And these patterns do, they have to mirror, they reflect each other. And that's what it's all about, cycles.
Yeah, I had a woman call into the show last Saturday, and she just really went into the more the Hindu program, and you know, and this person is the avatar who was born on this planet, you know, now, and we all have to respect that this is the true representative of God now on the planet, and you know, went through the whole thing, and I told her, I said, that's true for you, but you know, what about all the other cultures who also have their avatars and their beliefs and things like that, and maybe we should just look for the symbolism there, or the messages in all of these experiences, and unify around that versus just one name or one being. But boy, she just couldn't handle that one. I couldn't get a word in edgewise.
That's part of the programming. We've been taught to want it, to hang on to one belief, you know, the separation.
Yeah. I kind of see it, my own personal belief is, I just see it as a consciousness and an energy, and that we live in a multidimensional reality, basically, or a vibrational continuum, and each level, each dimension, each plane, whatever you want to call it, is so full of life and expressions and entities that, you know, to box any of this stuff or pigeonhole any of it is just... I guess it's kind of constricts your own being to do that.
It makes lots of people feel safe if they can stay in that safe box of, you know, only the known things. But that's not what life is about.
Yeah.
It's infinite possibilities. We can't even comprehend the possibilities from our 3D minds.
You know, it's funny. Here's an interesting one. A lot of the pictures they have of Jesus, where he's standing in a statue, he's actually holding a position of the mudra for fire, and which is ancient Yigong teachings, which they say actually go back to Egypt.
Yes.
You know, some of the mudras. And I found it really interesting seeing this, and people don't realize this, that if they did realize that, it would connect them with the East and with Egypt all at the same time, you know.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. It's amazing how many, the way Hakim described it is this ancient, huge, highly technological and, you know, spiritual society. And we see it all over the planet. There's evidence of this everywhere. But he would describe this area in Egypt as huge. Egypt was huge, all the way from Lebanon down to most of probably Africa. But it's from here that the tribes went out to China and then Europe and all over. And my guess is they communicated with the entire planet at that time.
There seems to be rumors that Egypt was spawned out of ancient, you know, Atlantis and Lemuria.
And labels.
Yeah, and then those came from the stars. So it goes, it seems our root is in the stars originally, or even if you want to go back.
We're all star stuff. I think Robert Bevall said that once, and I love it. We're star stuff. The ancients knew this.
Yeah, even our soul, you know, originated in spirit. So if you're going to identify with the body, you know, your body's star stuff. And if you're going to originate, identify with the soul, then your soul came from the source. And And, you know, if we would identify that, we might just be able to all get along.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yeah. So going further into this, I've always in meditations, it was quite, one time I'll share experience with you. There was a 14-year-old girl here with her mother, and I was going through kind of a crisis. It was quite a while ago in a relationship, and kind of beat myself up, because everything came up in this relationship, I'm always self-analyzing and saying, okay, where did I go wrong here? What did I do? And I was kind of beating myself up in it. And all of a sudden she just starts channeling this 14-year-old girl, and who was coming through her was ISIS. Mm-hmm. And then she tells me, she says, you have to keep loving no matter how hard it hurts. You have to keep loving. You can't constrict the heart. And it was just a beautiful message.
It just
opened me wide up. And so it's always been fascinating to me, and I'm not attached to one or the other, but it does seem like these beings do exist, or it might just be a house of consciousness that people attune to.
Yeah.
You know, like the house of Mary or the house of Jesus or the house of whatever.
Well, it is. It's an expression of energy. It's a frequency. Each one of the netters represented a specific frequency of possibilities. And they do exist, and it's our nature to want to put a label to them, to name it. Uh-huh. So we can call it ISIS. We can call it Sekhmet. But it's an expression, and it exists. You're right. It has it's a frequency that has an intent or a consciousness. So, yes.
Yeah, the message was so powerful, and the energy behind it was just incredibly healing. And then right after that, I walked outside, and this bird lands on my shoulder. It just sits there.
Now I love that.
Yeah, and it was one of those evening grosbeaks, which are very wary birds. I mean, you hardly ever get even close to these birds, and it just flew right up and landed right on my shoulder, which
now there's a huge message in that.
yeah, and so all of a sudden I look at this bird and I go, well, I can't be that bad person if the birds are landing on me. And I decided to stop.
Now that's a very special moment.
Yeah, I decided to stop beating myself up after that. But but it's kind of interesting. You know, I keep trying to get out of the boxing program or put a name or an image to consciousness and energy, but it does seem to have a form or something that we can relate to.
Well, and you know, I think that's why they did what they did. I mean, you look at Sekhmet is one that a lot of people relate to, and she's the lioness, and her name actually means power. But you look at a mother lion, this lioness, and you look at the attributes of this great it's a force of nature, this mother love. It's protective. It's fiercely protective. It's loving to the point where who do you go to when you're sick? You go to mom because she heals you. It's healing. So she represents, you know, who can make everything right magically? I mean, she represents all of these qualities. And we relate it to this energy of the lion. And there's a label.
Mm-hmm. And it seems to me the nature of that on the statues there, she has this benevolent smile to her. It's a very very loving, nurturing energy. You know, you would think you'd have this big foreboding lion if you're going to put it up there to scare people away or show your power or whatever, but
you don't see that, do you?
No.
And some people do see the fierce look. They call it the many faces of Sekhmet because people will see different faces.
Yeah, I guess it's all, you know, whatever you project on it or your however you package it or frame it is what you're going to experience.
Mm-hmm. But did you know that she also represents the solar flares that we just talked about?
Oh, yeah.
She is the solar flares that is creating the purification on Earth, which is also causing the Earth's magnetics to change, the frequency to rise, and, of course, bringing in the new energy, the new awakening.
No, that's a new one for me. I knew she definitely represented the fire, but that definitely would fit the package there. I know we've had some strange experiences here, and we're actually photographing these beings, and they're feline beings that have been appearing here. And there's fifth, sixth, and seventh dimensional ones, and it's really each one is different. The fifth dimensional ones are humanoid, very humanoid looking. They look like a cross between a cat and a human.
Mm-hmm.
The sixth dimensional ones look more like a panther, and they're kind of a pink violet energy when you photograph them. And we have a master teacher named Khan who comes here, and he just amazing photographs. He does 21-day dark retreats and things like that. So he can see these beings, and his frequencies are so high, he actually gets photographs of them as well. And then there's a seventh dimensional one that is a lion being. It's an upright lion, and they're very, very big. I mean, they're huge, and you know they're supposedly the benevolent protectors. You know, they protect the gods supposedly.
Now that falls right into. Right into what the Egyptians used the symbols for.
Yeah, and you know what's funny is that I went at this backwards. I actually experienced the beings, and then I did the research, you know, to find out. You know, in India, they called them Narsringa, which were the benevolent protectors as well. So a lot of the cultures have experienced these beings. And I know in India, they have stories of where a whole village would pray to Narsringa. And the bandits would be coming to the village, you know, to loot the village. And all of a sudden, the bandits are just getting knocked off the horses, and their clothing would be getting shredded. And then they'd run off, you know, they'd take off. But nobody ever saw these beings. They just saw the impact it had, you know, because they must have been coming in from another dimension or something. But
that's what it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's quite interesting. But I think if we rise to the occasion, we can start seeing into these other dimensions and actually experiencing these other beings.
I do too, and I think that's going to be happening more and more as we move through the next few years.
Yeah, it's to me, it's you know.
I'm losing you. I can't hear you.
Okay, can you? How about now? Are you there?
You come in and out.
Okay, that's probably these solar flares, or just talking about segments probably.
Segment,
fired
yes.
up the fired up the internet. Is it coming through okay now?
You're still coming in and out.
Okay, well we'll keep going, because I have a really clear signal here, and and so we'll keep going with this. If we get too broken up, you know, we can start over. But if there's anything that you want to discuss about the ancient Egyptians or Kemetians and how this relates to, you know, the shift that we're going through, I'd love to just let you go ahead and speak about whatever topic you want to.
Well, I could talk about the cycles, but I think we pretty much covered that. I think what's fascinating to me is, how everything is reflective and mirroring each other here in Egypt. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, are you there?
Yeah, you're coming in really good.
I still can't hear you.
Go ahead. We have you here. You sound real good here.
Figures. Well, then I should just start talking.
Yeah.
Okay. Cycles. The way the Egyptians, or the way Hakim would describe the cycles, and I mentioned this, was the path of the sun through the sky. And this, of course, was represented by the different sun gods, or gods, or netters, I shouldn't say gods, that they associated with the sun. And as we spoke, we are now entering the age of what we call the Age of Kepper, which is the winged scarab, and most people are familiar with that as the new dawn. What we're falling from is what we just discussed as well, the age of Amun or Amen, which I find it interesting because we've been taught to say Amen at the end of our prayers, and Amen actually means to keep it hidden or the hidden, which I find interesting. The other stages, after we rise out of Kepher, there were five, as I said, five stages. We would go into Ra, which is the stubborn, and this would be the sun when it's just midway between dawn and noon, and Moon, which is our root word for noon, would be the sun at its highest peak. The stage that is most interesting is the stage of Aten. And I bring this up, or I continued, because so many people are connected to the era, the 18th dynasty of Akhenaten. And the reason he changed his name from Amenhotep III to Akhenaten was because he was so consumed by this energy of this highest cycle. The Aten cycle was the highest peak when they say that we were at the highest frequency and had the most use of what the indigenous here say 360 senses. Are you there?
I'm here.
James?
Yeah, I'm
okay.
Here.
Okay. I'm only hearing silence, so I'm not sure if we're still there.
No, I'm here.
Okay. Did you just want me to continue?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, the highest state of Aten with this 360 senses, people say, well, how could we possibly have had 360 senses? And to me, this is almost symbolic of having the full circle, full capability of the use of, you would consider, you know, when we look at frequency, we think of color, we think of sound, we think of there's a different frequency for all of these things. Well, full spectrum, we currently in three dimension don't see full spectrum, but with a 360 senses, we have full use of our minds, of total interdimensional capability. So when people, and I want to relate this even to when we look at the pyramid sites and the temple complexes, because these complexes were built, people are, I don't know if you see it, James, but on the internet, I keep seeing people have different sacred geometric mappings of how the Giza Plateau was laid out, or how different other complexes were laid out, or Karnak Temple was laid out. And to me, this is absolutely not an accident, and oftentimes people will say, well, how did they do this? You know, the planning that would have gone involved. Well, if you're dealing with a mind that can think multidimensionally, this is, you know, it's not rocket science. And I think this is the element that people are forgetting, that it's quite possible that the people that built these pyramids, which of course were not tombs, and are far more ancient than 4 to 6,000 years and 6,000 years that some people would like to say that they were built. So again, this stage, if these people had these capabilities, we can't even begin to imagine. People say, how are the pyramids built? Or, you know, how did they do this? How did they get these huge, you know, 30, 60, 90 ton blocks all the way from Aswan to the Giza Plateau? Well, again, we're thinking with three-dimensional minds. And if during this age they, you know, even in a higher dimensionality, everything is less dense. So we're not even talking, you know, we can't even imagine how these things were done. So I find that all these arguments where people are saying that it was done this way, they carried them, you know, in boats, they flew them this way, they did that, there's really no way for us to imagine how they did it. We just know that they did.
Well, it seems like if you were, you know, a seventh dimensional being, you could manifest whatever you wanted just out of the electrum or out of the ether.
That's kind of what I'm envisioning. Why not?
Yeah, and just drop it down into the physical or whatever, you know, and make it appear. I've tried to get into that mindset on looking at different things, and It does seem to be they were carved and transported, but I'm not even attached to that. But it does seem to be that some really high heat and or like lasers or some type of levitation device was used, and it could have been not even a device. It could have been their own consciousness, or
Well,
something.
and no, go ahead.
Could be even a tool that is amplified by their consciousness. There's so many ways to look at this.
Exactly. Well, yeah, and we see evidence that different techniques were used. So there were different possibilities. The high heat, yes, we do see areas at the Aswan Gari even where it looks like they scalloped this rose granite out with, like it was butter. There are areas where we see tool marks, which could only have been done with a diamond-tipped drill. So again, different stages, different possibilities, different techniques, different purposes. But all in all, we see huge complexes, huge subterranean. I mean, there's a city underneath the plateau that goes down several levels with tunnels and chambers and shafts and wells, all connected to, as far to Saqqara and the other sites here in Giza. We've heard stories of possibly Fayum. In fact, all of Egypt could be connected by underground tunnels from all the stories we've heard, which makes you wonder about, well, the one thing that we see is everything was done with nature in mind. They had a huge connection to nature. They studied nature. And when we look at the way these we call them energy devices, the monuments worked, they worked exactly the same way. They mirrored nature. And when you look at like the pyramids, we're looking at these energy devices above the ground, but they just like a tree that grows, there's an underground network that was all connected, feeding this device. And when we start looking at it as a bioorganic machine, I don't even like the word machine. Hakim would say biosonic form of energy device. Then we start to understand how it could have possibly worked. Really exciting, but definitely we have to get away from the thought that they used devices like we do today, synthetic man-made materials. They really, it was all about how nature worked, and it was organic.
Yeah,
And we're
definitely.
finding a lot of interesting things.
Yeah, it seems all the materials they used had certain properties, and it's sad, but I guess the pyramids at one time had other materials on top of them that have been kind of pilfered,
Yes,
I guess, and
strip.
used for other
And
structures.
all of the sites have been heavily quarried, and all of them have been just like we buy a house and renovate it over the years. How many times do you repaint the walls in 100 years? Well, these sites were here for thousands of years, maybe tens of thousands of years, and people came and civilizations with different cultures would come and redecorate the sites. And unfortunately, we have people that researchers or academics that will come and look at the writing, the most recent or the oldest writing, and say that's how far the site dates back. And then the research stops. And what we're finding is these sites date back far, far, far much further. And uncovering the secrets, or we're finding some fascinating things, which.
Now, are you aware of? There's a couple finds there that they found. They found some underground. I guess they're putting in some kind of a aqueduct or something like that, and they ran into just massive underground facilities, which is hundreds, if not thousands, of rooms, small rooms that were just all quarried out. And they're all underneath the ground, and I guess now they're finding a lot more pyramids. With ground penetrating radar that are buried.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. There's probably more buried beneath the sands of Egypt than we've already discovered. And we know where some of these areas are. They do know where some of these monuments are buried, but they would say we don't have the funds to uncover them. I would say, you know, so many people have offered to come in and, I mean, there are millions of Egyptians that would gladly pick up a shovel and help. But, you know, I feel that for some reason, you know, the work has not happened, which is just mind-boggling considering what the possibilities are of what's underneath the sands.
Maybe it is going on. We just don't know about it, you know, because they want, want to get the technology first.
That's the other side of it, and, you know, I can't speak to that. It's it's happening, obviously, but, you know, what are we going to do about it? There is one exciting bit of news you might have heard, that they have finally opened the Serapeum here to the public. It's been closed for at least a decade, and most people, I mean, I don't think any, very few people have been in it for since 1985. But that's another amazing smoking gun right there, the Serapeum.
What's so different? What's so different about that than what people have been had access to in the past?
Well, what you're looking at is an underground complex. It's great hallways. They run east to west, and they're flanked by small chambers that that house these huge, giant granite boxes. I mean, these boxes are huge. Now, Egyptologists, in fact, everyone associates this complex with an Apis bull cult because of some writing that was found. They believe that the Egyptians during this particular time actually buried their bulls in these huge sarcophaguses. Now, keep in mind, Christopher Dunn, I'm sure you're familiar with Christopher Dunn.
Yes.
He's been down, he's done his measuring and his studying, and, you know, he's basically said that these boxes were made, and you can see it. I mean, I have pictures. These boxes were made with unbelievable technical detail, and I mean, they're beautiful. The finish on them is like a mirror. It's so shiny and so polished. I mean, we would have trouble creating these boxes today with all the machinery that we have. Okay, and take that aside. They have these huge lids. I mean, these things are huge. Okay, take that aside. How did they get these huge boxes down into this complex, down these halls, and then negotiate the corners to get them inside small chambers? Because if they're pulling them, like with ropes, like they say, hundreds, you know, thousands of men are pulling these blocks with ropes, well, how do they pull them to the back wall?
Uh-huh.
You can't do that. So to me, it's like the biggest smoking gun on the planet. There is no way you could be. We were actually at the opening of the Serapeum. It was in September, the end of September. And they had the engineer there that had overseen all the work that was done, all the restoration. And even he said, I can't tell you how they did it. You know, and in front of the Minister of Antiquities and everything, you know, I can't tell you how they did it. It's mind-boggling.
A thousand thin little people.
Well, you know, the only thing I can think of, and Hakeem said, is they had to fly the boxes somehow down those hallways, because there's no way people could have taken, you know, there's just, and how they orchestrated the corners, everything. And that's not all. There's so much more there that you just look at and you know. And we believe this is all part of the complex. This is part of the entire energy device that was the pyramids, all worked together as one device. They're all connected.
Well, there's yogis that have demonstrated today that they could levitate some pretty big boulders.
With sound, yes.
Yeah, and you look at the castle there, the Coral Castle.
You know, yes.
Yeah, he levitated some pretty big stones by himself. So there is...
He knew the secret.
Yeah, there's a secret. There is a technology that it can be done. It's too bad he didn't show that to our...
Tell somebody.
Yeah, tell somebody how that was done.
Things that make you go,
Yeah. But I know, you know, it's just things you think of today. You know, the ancient, let's say in our own timeline, the computers of yesterday used to be just massive. They'd take over whole rooms. You know, and now we have more power in an iPhone than they had, you know, back in the day. And you think about that, well, the same thing with the tools they used. You know, they probably, you know, mass tools that we would use to move boulders and things like that is probably the size of an iPhone. You know, in their time, they might have had, and there's a thing called the builder's tool. Have you heard about that?
No, that's new to me.
Well, there was this, in ancient times, they talked about the builder's tool, and it was made of gold, and it had a kind of like a, I'm not sure if it had a ram's head on it or something, and it was just this tool that the master builder had, and I guess this thing could cut or levitate anything or do whatever he wanted to do with this special tool. And I'd like to find out more. I saw it on some, like a History Channel or something like that, special, and I never looked deeper into it. But, you know, it makes sense that they would probably have tools.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, we have some theories and some ideas, possibly what they used, that we're talking to some people about. That would have worked perfectly, it could have been done bioorganically, and it could have literally bored right through stone, rock, anything. It could have made tunnels. It could have done their perfect etchings and smooth rocks and everything. So there are many possibilities.
Yeah, they have water technology now, where they, you know, just shoot water at a very high speed that can cut through stone and steel and things like that. So it's like a
And frequency alone, resonant frequency is powerful. It could, could collapse a bridge, you know, one note.
Yeah. Yeah, the technology is there. It's just a matter of it's been kept from us, you know, and sequestered in certain mm-hmm. elite groups and things like that. But, mm-hmm. You know, I think it's all going to be surfacing here. I had the luxury of working with a German biophysicist with about, I don't know how many degrees, PhDs he's got, but, you know, he had some technology that I saw that I was blown away, you know, by. So, you know, I can't even talk about it. But,
I know
it exists, you know, because I've seen it and held it, and I know that technology exists. So it wouldn't, you know, using that technology, I could see it'd be a very piece of cake, you know, to do some of the things.
I totally agree with you. And I know that they had many sites where they did a lot of alchemy, just working with minerals and things like that to achieve things. So no doubt in my mind, they understood the mechanics of our physical, natural world much better than most of us. But I agree with you. There is an elite that knows. The information has been passed down to an elite few.
Yeah, I'm curious who's got it now, but I know some that have it. But it usually comes through the elite have it, and their scientists have the toys. I just wish they would share them for the greater good, you know.
I think that's happening.
Yeah.
It has to happen.
It's
time.
I think it will eventually. I think a lot of it, too, is that humanity, we have to rise in consciousness before we can have that technology.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds like a cop-out, but I just think of somebody, some psycho, you know, that had the ability to jump dimensions or the ability to go here or there and you know, drop a bomb and disappear again and things like that. You know, it's like... Mm-hmm.
They would have been so evolved that dropping a bomb wouldn't have been on, you know, that's something we do. But once you've evolved, if you're expressing yourself as a higher vibration, dropping a bomb wouldn't be something you would want to do.
Exactly. It would make no sense whatsoever. But, you know, consider if you were in unity consciousness, I mean, who would you be destroying other than yourself? So.
Yeah, it's like dropping an axe on your big toe. You're not going to do it because you understand that everything is connected.
Yeah, but unfortunately, we have a lot of disconnects going on right now, and especially with our leadership. You know, they're totally disconnected, but hopefully that's going to. My feeling is, I'm curious if this relates into any of the Egyptian teachings, but I've always felt that a lot of the problems that we have today and the people that are creating those problems are going to have a real hard time adjusting to the new energies, because they're not going to be frequency specific to where the Earth is going and where evolution is taking us. And do they talk about that as far as these souls on where they might end up, or
they don't talk about where they would end up. They have or I should say Hakim had a label for them. He called them the Nuti, and it all started in from his perspective. Well, not all started, but basically the priests of Amun started the divide and conquer thing, and he called them the harvestless. They had the harvestless jobs because they created this, you know, you go out and you make the harvest and do all the work and bring me, you know, the fruits of your labor and I'll pray for you, you know, that thing. So they created a job through, you know, this you know, fear of your salvation. Hakim would say it was the word for death. So they created death and mummification and all these things in order to support themselves, basically.
I know.
Go ahead. I was just saying, he would say that's where it all began.
Yeah.
I think my perspective of what you're saying is, there are those that will choose or just won't. I think the energy is going to shift no matter what, and you're right. Some won't be congruent with that. Some frequencies just won't be able to express themselves here. And part of me believes that in the quantum world, that, you know, they'll just kind of, you know, they'll go off into another reality, you know, where they can stay where they're at. And maybe you only move forward, or it's not even forward. There's no judgment, but you move by choice. If you're ready for it, I don't know, and maybe not. Maybe this is all a game, and we all become one, and you know, it's like a big day, and there's a cast party. We all celebrate afterwards.
Yeah, yeah,
I kind of like that thought.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems to be, you know, one theory. You know, it does seem to be, you know, free will and choice, I think, is honored on every level, but mm-hmm. there are consequences to those choices. And to me, it seems like in order to have a balance or keep balance in the universe, you know, that there would be some kind of consequences to keep you going forward, you know, in evolution versus devolution, where you would just descend, you know, into to who knows? I mean, maybe you could even descend to a level of where you're just disassembled altogether, even on a soul level.
I hope not.
Yeah.
I think we hit as far down as we're going to go, because I do believe we're already in the process of moving back up again. And I do think it's an energetic cycle. Uh-huh. So I do believe that we all are going to, I think we all will come out of it. It's times, different levels, different, you know, some of us will do it kicking and screaming, and some of us will embrace the change, will embrace it. But
yeah.
I can't imagine. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of, I've heard all these different stories, you know, but they all have the same one thing they all agree on, is that we are shifting and we are moving into a whole new world, a whole new frequency, and that we have to match that frequency if we're going to continue, you know, on this.
Well, as human beings on the planet's frequency is moving forward, is going up, and we can't exist here if we don't rise with it. You know, and they talk about these new kids, you know, and they label them indigos or in crystal and all that, but these children are just being born into a frequency we're having to achieve on a daily basis. I think that's the difference. But yeah, I think we have to keep up with the planet, and it's happening whether we like it or not.
Oh, I agree. I think it's going to get really interesting, to say the least.
Oh, yeah.
Even in the next 2 months.
Yeah, the veils are lifting. We're seeing right through people. I see this on a day-to-day level, where just people that, you know, never even bothered to think are beginning to see through everything. You know, this, look at this big Occupy movement what do they call it, the Arab Spring and the Egyptian Revolution and all these things. Suddenly, it's like everybody woke up and said, you know what, we're living in a corrupt world.
Yeah.
You know, it was beautiful. you know, beautiful and not, but you know what I mean. It's like, wow, people I never dreamed are actually saying, you know what, I don't believe that anymore. I don't believe they mean the best for me anymore.
Yeah. I wonder when the U.S. is going to figure it out. I mean, there's a movement here and people are figuring it out, but I'm always wondering how soon this revolution is going to happen, because it really needs to happen here, you know. A lot of the reasons.
Americans are, yeah, they you know, and I say this, it, a lot of people in Egypt, I'm hearing, you know, because we work with a lot of visitors, and nobody's coming to Egypt now because media and the government are telling people it's too dangerous, which anyone living here knows it's perfectly safe. If there's nothing has changed. It's, you know, it's a fabulous place to be and the best time to come to Egypt because the sites are empty. But I laugh because the Egyptians, you know, we see all this hype and all this stuff that's going on and these planned media events, and Egyptians have lived in a corrupt government for, you know, decades. So they already know that it's not true. And they go on living as they always do. They don't get caught up in the hype. Where I think, and I don't want to pinpoint anybody, but a lot of Western societies really believe that their government is doing good things for them, and, you know, the media only reports the truth. And, you know, it's a whole different ballgame. And so they believe that, you know, Egypt is a dangerous place to be, or, you know, that the events they see on TV are real. And, they, you know, I, for one, I've been at places here in Egypt during the day and gone home at night and seen something totally different on the news. So, you know, I can say for positive it's not happening, but you
well,
know, can't convince
me. Yeah, the good news is I think they just did a major poll, and 67% of the people said that they don't believe the news anymore, that it's totally totally rigged.
Well, even the reporters are saying I'm not allowed to report, you know, I can't even write my own stories anymore because they have to. You know, yeah, that's good to know.
I think, yeah, I think the one thing they can't control is consciousness and this awakening that's happening. And although they're trying, you know, through various methods, but the bottom line is that this shift is so big. It's the energy behind it is so enormous. You know, it's just like it's like standing in front of a tsunami. You know, saying stop. You know, it's. You just better go with it, you know, flow with it.
Embrace it. Embrace the change, and then you'll ride with the wave. You won't be knocked over by it.
Yeah, grab a surfboard, you know.
Oh, yeah. This is fun.
Yeah. But anyway.
We wanted to be here.
Yeah.
Sorry.
We're coming up to the end of the hour. Is there anything, like, do you have a contact, a way people can contact you or to get any more information about some of the work you're doing?
Oh, absolutely. We have a website. www.kematology, KHEMITOLOGY.com. And we have a really great, for those of you that are on Facebook, great Facebook group, just the Kemet School of Ancient Mysticism. Just type that into the search engine, you'll find us. But really active group where we share all kinds of posts about world events, what's happening, Egypt, ancient mysteries. And what's happening currently in the current shift.
Great. Hey, well, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. It's been great, and it's always good to hear other perspectives on this shift we're in, and keep up the good work.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot, James. I really enjoyed being here and talking to you, and come to Egypt!
That is on my bucket list, you know. And I may just take Gary up on one of his offers. You never know, and end up over.
And we have a lot of tours coming up, and Gary's involved in quite a few of them. So it'd be really nice to have you come and visit.
That'd be awesome. Thanks for the invite.
Awesome.
Well, got to sign off. So again, thanks so much for coming on the show, and we'll have to do it again real soon.
Awesome. Thanks, James. Happy
to
be here.
You too. All right. This is James Gillen signing off. Have a great day.